Hello, welcome to this week's Opening Bell. I'm boxing news editor Tris Dixon, joined by my trusty sidekick, Matt Christie. Matt, you comfortable?
Yeah, just about. Some jabbing in my ribs here, but yeah, all right.
Have you had a haircut?
I have had a haircut, yes. I shave my head twice a week. This morning was one of those occasions,
looking shiny. Interesting, Matt. Twice a week. So when's the next one?
What are we on? Wednesday, probably, maybe Saturday.
So if you guys can send Matt a reminder on Saturday with a hashtag shave to his Twitter account, I'm sure it'd be gratefully appreciated. Matt, so not loads of action going on this week, but we have a jam-packed issue. Boxing News fans will be able to see that we have a new and exclusive interview with Prince Nassim Hamed, the divisive Sheffield star. Matt, what are your memories of Nassim Hamed?
Positive for the most part. As I was growing up, he was one of the leading guys in British boxing. I used to thoroughly enjoy watching his fights. He provided a lot of excitement. Now, looking back, there's a sense that he didn't quite fulfill his vast and enormous potential. However, on the face of it, he had a career to be proud of.
When you watched him as a fan, did you want him to win or lose?
I never had that with Nassim. I never had that kind of love to hate feeling with him, that I wanted him to lose. I always wanted him to win. I had it a little bit with Eubank, but that's probably a subject for another conversation. But yeah, when I was younger, no, Nassim, I was always very much in his corner.
So content-wise on Naz, we've got a great interview by Danny Flexen speaking to Naz, who he unashamedly refers to as an idol of his. We've got a great debate in there featuring Frank Warren, Brendan Lingle, Ryan Sangalia, and Danny Flexen. And much, much more content on Naz. If you're a Naz fan, even if you're not, it's really interesting reading all the way through. And in fact, one of the high points is Ian Dark's guest column this week, where he doesn't mince his words about Naz. Some really interesting stuff in there. To the action, Matt, and it started in Canada this year with Canada's Super Bowl. But you weren't too taken by Jean-Pascal's win over Lucien Boutte, were you?
No, it was almost a case for me, and you know, with all due respect to Jean-Pascal for winning a fight of that magnitude, it was almost a case that Lucien Boutte lost that fight rather than Pascal won it. Boutte seemed gun-shy from the start. He seemed to come alive a little bit at the end. But know all the hallmarks of a fighter who mentally is no longer right and probably will not be right again.
Do you think a pre-Froch Boutte beats Pascal?
It's hard to say, isn't it? I mean, Froch had that belief.
Humour me, Matt. Humour me.
He showed that he showed in the last few rounds and flashes. He showed that he'd got the skills to beat Pascal. There was nothing there though, really, to suggest that Boutte would win that fight. I don't know. Was Boutte overhyped throughout in the early stages of his career? Was he riding on his confidence? I don't know. It's difficult to say.
Amazing now that someone who built up such a shiny record has lost two of his last three. It instantly sort of changes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think history will be that kind to Boutte now. I think it's a different scenario to when fighters like Vander Holyfield, Roy Jones, people like that start losing at the tail end of their careers. This really has been Boutte losing when he's moved up a level, and I think that will perhaps expose his credentials when people look back on his career.
Talking of exposing credentials, I'm not going to say that it would happen, but the logical fight now for Jean-Pascal is with Adonis Stevenson. Another popular Canadian from Haiti. Pascal mentioned it before, he's mentioned it after. Stevenson Pascal, is it a fight you'd like to see? And if you could make any fight for Jean-Pascal, if you were his promoter, what fight would you make?
I think you'd have to make that one simply if you're his promoter, you've got money signs. you know, in front of the eyes, and I think that is the one that would make the most money. I think it is an interesting fight. Stevenson is at that point in his career now where, you know, he needs these defining fights. Pascal potentially could be that. He's a former world champion. Okay, he blew away Chad Dawson, but with the exception of Dawson, there is no one like Pascal on his record. And I think Pascal will make be a difficult evening for anyone, really.
He always shows up in shape. You still can't quite gauge what damage, if any, Bernard Hopkins did to him. He doesn't seem to be the same fighter, for sure, though, does he?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't seem to be the same fighter. I mean, the thing is with Pascal is, you know, I remember when he first came onto the scene in like 2005, 2006, he was a highly regarded prospect. He used to model himself on Roy Jones. There are flashes of what Roy Jones does in the way Pascal kind of adopts his game plans and what have you. But he's got too many faults to be an elite fighter, I think. And those faults now will be with him for the rest of his career. So I don't think he'll ever make that step up.
Did you see the Mike Perez fight?
I did see the Mike Perez fight.
What
did
you make of Mike Perez, who struggled with Carlos Takam?
Yeah, I mean, I spoke about that briefly. I mean, we do something on the website now, a weekend review, where it basically looks over everything, all the talking points of the last few days. And something that struck me with Perez was that he did seem a little bit gun shy, and I was surprised, to be honest with you, that he was back in action so soon after the bout.
With Abdeslam.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I was shocked that it was so soon. It was just a case of 2 months later.
Maybe he did need to get back on the horse, though.
Yeah, maybe. And there is that school of thought as well. But he certainly looked out of sorts. You can make a strong case for the fact that Takam deserved that decision. So we'll have to see what happens with Perez. I think the acid test for Perez will be the next few outings, because there's a hole in that heavyweight division, and Perez is one of the leading contenders to fill it.
You talk about proving grounds, really, with...
I feel like we're going about 300 miles an hour in this... this fight.
Well, sorry, I've got... Well, people will be pleased to know I've got an SEO training course in 15 minutes, so we do need to go through it. So, yeah, just as well you're streamlined with that bald head of yours. Look, I've even got a reminder come through on the iPad.
Right, okay. Right, okay, let's go.
So, we talk about proving grounds. There's some this week, this weekend, things, points to prove... for Marco Huck, who is looking to do a better job and fear at Arslan than he did in their first fight, which was close, controversial. David Price looking to bounce back from those two soul-destroying defeats to Tony Thompson against Konstantin Erik, and Lamont Peterson, crushed sensationally by Lucas Matisse last year, comes back against Dieri Jean. Who would you like to be ringside for out of all those fights?
I think the Huck Arslan fight, the first one, was fairly interesting, entertaining. I think David Price's return is intriguing. So yeah, just for the fights alone, as opposed to the location, I'd like to be ringside for the card in Germany.
Okay, that's not an offer, by the way.
Didn't think it was. Right, well, let's move on. Come on, we ain't got time.
Talking of people coming back from crushing defeats, there's also the return of Cornelius Canine Bundridge, who lost his light middleweight championship last year, and Curtis Stevens, the New York banger, who was stopped by Gennady Golovkin when saved for another day. You talked about early returns earlier with Mike Perez. Stevens... what now looks like a great move. It didn't look bad at the time. His corner saved him for another day. 2 months later, he's back in the ring. We'll only find out if it's the right move after Saturday, after he's fought Patrick Majewski in Atlantic City. Do you think it's too soon for someone to come back after a loss like that?
Not really. I don't think Stevens didn't describe.
People are going to be putting this in like, what is it? The minus numbers to listen to it.
Yeah. That's right. I'm trying to get this all through. Right.
Breathless.
Okay. Come on. Let's go. Right. Curtis Stevens. Yeah. Briefly, I didn't think he disgraced himself against Golovkin. It was a punishing defeat. He took a lot of punches during that fight, but I think the vast majority were not expecting Stevens to do as well as he did. He maybe didn't establish himself as a leading middleweight, but he certainly proved that he belongs maybe at fringe contender level. And if he can win impressively against the Majewski, who is, it's a really good fight, actually. It's a really, really good test for Stevens. Then he proves that he's perhaps in and around the top 10.
Okay. And then the lead preview well written by Danny Flexen, looks at Mikey Garcia's fight with Juan Carlos Burgos. I won't step on Danny's toes about the preview, but one thing that people are talking about, which I really like the sound of, is Mikey Garcia against Uriokis Gamboa later this year. We want that fight, don't we?
Yeah, it was in the the top 20 fights that we picked out for the forthcoming year. I fear that if that fight does come about, it may have come a little bit too late for Gamboa. But it is the kind of fight where perhaps Gamboa at last will step up and show the world that he was worthy of all the praise that he was getting a few years ago. But for me, Mikey Garcia is one of the fighters really, really to keep an eye on in the next year to 18 months.
Okay.
So is that it? We've finished?
No. Do you know what? There's something I actually haven't told you about.
All right, okay. What was it? Just Las Vegas?
No. Yeah, the one. No. Before we came in, I tweeted I wanted some questions for the podcast.
Okay.
So I've got some questions.
Okay.
So our knowledgeable fans have been... Oh, fans. What do I sound like? Our knowledgeable listeners have tweeted in some questions, some really good ones as well. I see the first one. I've clocked it. Let me answer it. From Mark McFarlane, your latest rankings have Quigg at super bantamweight number 3, literally based on draw versus Salinas and a win over Diego Silva. Question is how. The main reason for his high ranking was his stoppage win over Rendell Munro, who was high based on his victories over Kiko Martinez. When you look at Frampton and Quigg's records, Frampton's best win is against Martinez. Quigg's best win is against Munro. Munro twice beat Martinez, and so therefore Quigg, along with the strength of his career thus far, goes in at number 3 with Frampton just before. That's the thought process. Rankings are always open to debate. The position of Frampton and Quigg, who should be where. What I will say is that our rankings very, very, very rarely are based on who might beat whom. It is to do with results and who has beaten whom. So that explains that.
Like it.
Matt, let me chuck the next question at you from Andy Clark. Is a fighter allowed to take a tactical knee to avoid an onslaught? Saw Judah do so versus Cotto, seemed wrong to me. That's from Andy Clark.
Yeah, of course a fighter's allowed to do that.
Not enough do, really, do they?
No, they don't. And you very often see fighters get themselves into trouble that perhaps could be avoided by not doing that.
I wonder if George Groves had taken a knee.
Exactly. He might be world champion now. But I mean, the first guy that springs to mind for me is Frank Bruno. That used to, once he was in trouble, he would freeze. He would. I don't know. He didn't have that ability. Once he'd been caught, he didn't have that strength of mind or to take a knee. And sometimes that's the only way to get out the line of fire, to go down, take the count. And you can say, of course a fighter can do that. Of course it's fair. By doing that, then they've immediately lost a point on the scorecards. It's all, if they get to the end of the round, it's going to be a 10-8 round because they've taken the knockdown. But sometimes a fighter needs just to do that, just to get a bit of respite. And if they can do, if that's the only way of doing it, then I think, yeah, you've got to advise a fighter to do that. I think a lot of corner men would do in those sort of situations.
It's a tactical knee, and it buys respite that you won't otherwise have.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
The problem is, obviously, what happens then is you dock yourself a point, so it's whether you think you're going to be strong enough to come back with a 2-point deficit. Yeah. So it all depends on the tactics and the time of the fight, I suppose. Matt, if I can answer the next one. This is from John Reynolds. Do you think the Cold War that involves Warren/Eddie Hearn, Golden Boy/Top Rank will ever subside? And will we get fights fans want to see? If that's the second part of the question, will we get fights fans want to see, then yes, I reckon we will. Will the Cold War subside? For certain fights, it could do. I'm not holding my breath, certainly anytime soon. Things are very tense between all four factions that you mentioned. All four are fighting to be market leaders in their own marketplaces, and that doesn't mean giving an inch to their competitors, rivals, or opposing promoters. Will it ever subside? Yes, because these things are cyclical. They all work in, you know, what goes around comes around, and we've seen it before, and then it thaws, then it starts again. it will subside at some point, but I can't see it. Certainly if we're looking at 2014, I can't see two of those, let alone all four of them, sat around a table breaking bread.
Mm.
Matt, do you, this is from Ben Horrocks. Do you think Frot should fight GGG? So not GG, but GGG.
GGG, yeah.
Yeah, do you think he should fight him?
No. Next.
Okay. All right. Okay, Glenn Wade. Was Maidana a step up too quick? I thought so. I thought so. As soon as the fight was even contemplated, your thoughts, please. I'm guessing that was Maidana for Broner.
Yeah, no, I think you... not necessarily the opponent was a step up too quick. I think the step up in weight was too quick. And I think perhaps that Broner is making a mistake by going back in with Maidana. It could be the best decision he's ever made. He could prove himself from that. If he loses that rematch to Marcus Maidana, then for me, that's the end of Adrian Broner.
Oh, harsh words, man. Harsh words. But I agree. I think it's foolhardy, I think the word. Yeah. I mean, Broner might win some fans for taking the challenge, but I think he's bang up against it again. I really do. Matt, Ian Moffat, is there anything the governing bodies can do to clean up payment issues with promoters or protect fighters more?
I don't know. I don't know really.
It's a good question. Though.
Yeah, I mean, there's some good stuff on the website that referee Paul Thomas did about governing bodies. That's quite important. But I think governing bodies and promoters, I mean, it's no secret that certain promoters have got favourite governing bodies and vice versa. That doesn't paint the best picture for our sport. And I think the two people or the two groups of people that are best positioned to improve our sport are the promoters and the governing bodies. But we could sit and talk about the reasons for that you'd miss your meeting anyway.
Okay. Three more questions, okay? I'll take this one then. I'll give you a break. From Ben Shield. Will it dent Carl Froch's legacy if he ducks GG for inferior JCC? AW, GGG, still high caliber, but surely this is the easiest fight. So he's saying that Chavez Jr. is the easiest fight for Froch. Ward and Golovkin, still high caliber, but easiest fight for Froch is Chavez. Style-wise, it's easy to say that, but you know what? I reckon Carl has a hard night with Chavez, who's a big lump, doesn't really go anywhere when he's been hit. His game, we saw what he was like, what he still had in the 12th round against Martinez after taking a beating for 11 and a bit rounds. So despite questions about his stamina, he looked fit enough to me in the 12th round of that fight. Probably not as fit as I did, I think, leaping off my chair, which was first time I stood up during a fight for a long, long time watching that on TV. About Froch's legacy, though, sorry, to the original part of the question, will it dent his legacy if he ducks Groves? I've given this actually a fair bit of thought over the last week or two. What I think it will do is means that in retirement, Froch will always have the question from people up and down the streets, why didn't you fight George Groves again? And that, I think, will affect him personally. I don't think it should affect his legacy, given what he's achieved. But the question is, will it dent his legacy? Yes, I think it will, because there will always be that question mark. The same way, like it or not, Lennox Lewis had nothing left to prove. But people still say he didn't fight Vitaly Klitschko again because he wasn't hungry, he would have lost. You know, it's just, it's there. It's often how people sign off, you know, when they talk about Lennox. Doesn't mean he hasn't had a great career. Doesn't mean he's not an all-time great. But that's what people say. And so it dents his legacy somewhat. Mm-hmm. I think Groves would be quite a bit more because it was just such a massive story. Such a massive story. Anyway, two more, Matt. This one from Twitberry123, username Spond. Any Eubank Jr. news? David Price, was he overhyped and how far can he go?
I haven't heard anything on Eubank Jr. As for David Price, I don't think he was... Perhaps he was overhyped, actually, now I say that, and without giving the question a lot of consideration. I think the thing is with David Price is that he was perhaps the brightest light in a rather, rather dull heavyweight division. And there was a lot of encouragement to move David Price quickly, to put himself in a position to fight one of the Klitschkos. And there was a school of thought out there that he had the stuff to beat the Klitschkos. But, you know, at the time, there was a lot of criticism that Tony Thompson was past it. He wasn't the right opponent for him to prove himself. David Price perhaps had that thought himself. But as Price now says, you could not pick a tougher learning fight in that division than Tony Thompson. And ultimately, you know, a big 6'6" southpaw, there's not many of those in the heavyweight division. So really, by beating him, it wouldn't really have taken him. It's not something that he needed to do. And I think he accepts that himself. Price, I still think that he will struggle to be a world champion. I'm not convinced that his mindset is right for that. I believe he has all the tools. I think criticisms about him not being able to take a punch are completely unfair. But I think now that, based on history and what's happened to fighters in the past, that David Price will struggle to prove himself as a world beater.
Okay, last question I'll take from Dom 1878, username Dom. Chances of Khan Brook being made for later in the year. If it does happen, then who do you think will win? Chance of it being made, you know, it all depends on what happens with Mayweather Khan. If Mayweather wins that, as you'd imagine, provided it happens on May the 3rd, then Khan Brook will make sense in September, I reckon, possibly at the MEN. All depends on what deals are going around and who's with what. Khan's got one more fight left with Box Nation. Brook's obviously a Sky fighter. We'll have to see what goes on in that respect. If it does happen, who would win? Right now, I'd say with Khan. I've picked Brook before in my mind several times. I would go with Khan for the simple fact that I think Khan lives the life a bit more than Brook. Although I'm not sure either of them have lives where they particularly just live in the gym. I go with Khan. If the wind changes tomorrow, maybe it was Brook, but certainly Khan right now. Matt, who'd you go for in that?
I think if the fight was made, I'd probably pick Brook. I'd probably pick Brook if the fight was made for the summer and they both had good, strong training camps. But like you say, I may feel completely differently tomorrow. It's a real, real pick and fight.
Okay. On that happy note, that's us finished for today. I've really enjoyed it, Matt. It's been emotional.
It has been emotional.
A whistle-stop tour of boxing this week.
I'm exhausted. Can I go home now?
No, guys, pick up your Nassim Hamed special issue this week. A lot of time, effort and thought has gone into it. We certainly hope you enjoy it. And I am not here next week. Matt will be picking up with either John or Danny, I'm sure. In the meantime, don't forget to remind Matt about his hair Saturday. Hashtag shave to at Matt C Boxing News. Thanks a lot for joining us, guys. I really appreciate it. Really appreciate your feedback on the podcast too. And we'll be back soon.